Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is Zenande Boetis.
Hello! Or should I say woof?
Woof. So I know this is awkward, because you and I both run different canneries in Collinsport in Maine. So even though that we have, you know, a rivalry with fishing, glad that we got together to talk about this movie, Dark Shadow. Like, it's pretty amazing. Like, two fishing empires joining together
Absolutely.
To talk.
Well, I mean, while we're busy talking, I'm actually burning your fishery down. So, you know, it's all part of the plan. All part of the plan.
You're burning down my 5%.
Mm-hmm. It's burning pink. All that potassium's burning pink, baby.
Oh, my fish. I just spent my family fortune on that after being locked in a coffin for 200 plus years.
Yeah, that's what you get. I think you can just come back after... Don't be so dramatic, though. What, it's 196 years. Come on. Like, can't just come back and everything's all fine and well, honestly.
I'm that vampire that uses hyperbole. That's all over the floor. No, it's not all over the floor. It's, like, just there. Like, for me, I jump everything up.
So dramatic.
I gotta tell you, in this movie, like, Angelique, played by Eva Green... I feel so bad for her. It's just, like, okay, in the beginning of the film, right, we see her as a child, and she's born into a life of servitude, and so she serves the Collins, and then it seems like Barnabas just uses her for a plaything, and she's like, hey, I love you. And he's like, yeah, I can't tell you I love you. Like, I don't know, whatever. It's all, I don't care. Pushes her to the side, and then, whatever, like, she gets pissed off, does a curse. And he, you know, like, let's see, who is it? Bella Heathcote, what, Victoria Winters, Josette Dupree, like, Dupress, like, she dies, he becomes a vampire, she locks him away, but, and then, years later, she's popular in Collinsport, she has her beautiful red car, thriving industry, she's done some mischievous things, sure, murderous things, but she's doing great, like, she's built an empire, and it's just, and at the, okay, spoilers, but at the end, when Barnabas is like, hey, I could have loved you. I'm like, no, you didn't. You couldn't have loved her. You just blew her off. Like, you, like, what's that line for? So I always felt, I feel bad. I feel real, but also Eva Green is so awesome. And she's having so much fun in this movie that maybe I felt for her more. But do you feel for Angelique, or am I crazy?
No, absolutely, especially in the beginning. But I think, I mean, she really, like, plays the character well, because you feel for, like, because Barnabas, like, he's a player, man. Oh, my word. He really just, he's this rich boy that's taking everything and everyone for granted and, like, just getting his way with whoever. Like, manipulation is, like, a big thing in the movie as well. Like, both of their characters, they're just manipulating everyone to get their way. But, yeah, I'm like... Would she have done that if she wasn't, like, you know, used to... Because she basically started at the bottom. So, she didn't really want to work her way to the top. She just fell for this boy hard. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was, you know, spurned by, like, the rejection. And, yeah, then the witch turned bad. Like, that's the thing. Yeah, he messed with the wrong witch. Yeah. But yeah, like, I mean, she really goes on a power trip. So I think, yeah, I think at the beginning of the movie, you feel bad for her. Then it's like, whoa, Nelly, she's going for it. Like, yeah, she's doing the whole girl boss thing hard. But then at the end, you again feel for her because, you know, she just wants to love. And he's like, but you cannot. Oh, it's, yeah, that last scene is always like, oh, shame.
She gives her heart to him.
Yeah, but then also... Yeah. Like, is he right? Can she not love? You know, it's like her idea of love. Because that's the thing. She's got an obsession thing happening, which that's not really love.
Mm-hmm. It's a great line, too. It's not hate. It's, what, obsession? Because if it was hate, she would have killed him. But she's, what, obsessed with him? That's a good... Oh, devotion.
Devotion, yes. The devotion. Like, but yeah, it's totally obsessed. It's all, that whole thing of she can't have him, no one can, and very dramatic. But yeah, also, like, kind of sad at the end where, like, I love it when she, at the end, well, in the third act, before, like, the big climatic battle scene, which is great, where she sees him kissing Victoria, Vicky, and she starts breaking. Like, her face starts cracking. That's so cool, but also so sad. It's like, she's breaking. Shen.
Of course, Burton turned her into a porcelain doll, almost, with like the doll-esque features.
I love that all, like the special effects there at the end. And also I love because she kind of, there's a Death Becomes Her kind of vibe at the end. It's another movie that I also love, with it like the twisting neck and getting shot a hole through her body. And it's definitely a whole Death Becomes Her thing, which is nice because there is a little bit of vanity there. So yeah, it was also pretty cool. I like that little, I don't know if it was a deliberate nod, but like, I think it was because, yeah, the comparison is pretty obvious.
Oh, for sure. And I also got to say, he comes in town using his vampire trickery with his mind powers. And maybe she made did something to do that too. But it's like she finally gets ahead. She has all these dudes telling her what to do. And then Barnabas comes in town using his vampire powers to take her business. It's frustrating. That's an attack right there. But also, she's the villain in 300 Rise of an Empire. Sorry, Zanandi. But I wanted her to win in 300 Rise of an Empire. I'm like, let her get the victory. She's awesome. Like, she's decapitating people and kissing them, just wiping people out. Maybe I just like Eva Green as a bad guy. I just want her to win. And that's a good villain, though.
But I love her in everything. I mean, she's just great. I'm always rooting for her, whether she's the good guy, the villain. I mean, I loved her in Penny Dreadful.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the first season of Penny Dreadful is like one of my favorite TV shows ever. And she was just so great because she literally played both the good guy and the villain, like, you know, fluctuated between like being possessed and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just I'm always going to root for Eva. So I guess.
This movie had a $150 million budget. Now, I guess it makes sense because of the success of what Alice and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. These two were just spitting out successful movies, but that's wild that this movie cost $150. Like, where did it go? Yes, it's beautiful. This is one of the production design by Rick Heinrichs. This dude won an Oscar. He worked on Sleepy Hollow, Last Jedi, Dumbo, Wolfman, Fargo, Batman Returns. The cinematography by Bruno Del Bonnell. He did
Amelie.
Yeah, 5 Oscars. He did Buster Scruggs, Inside Llewyn Davis, like Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Colleen Atwood, 4 Oscars.
Yeah.
Like, this is just a sumptuous, beautiful, well-shot, big practical set film. But $150 million, that's crazy. Because where did that go? Depp?
Well, like, I mean, yeah. And also, yeah, Danny Elfman doing the score, which Danny Elfman. But like, yeah, I mean, it looks pretty great. Listen, the visuals, like, and I've read reviews as well. Like, even people who didn't like it were like, kudos for how the movie looks. It really looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like that end scene where she cracks. That was so well done.
Yeah.
Like, from the beginning, we got that shot where it's like Liverpool, 1777 or something. And you've got like, yeah, the fog and the big boats and the beautiful figure eight that you actually later on see in Angelique's office. I don't know if you've picked that up. She's got that figure eight from the boats.
Oh.
The very, very first scene. It hangs in her office, yeah, where Johnny Barnabas comes to talk to her. Check out the background. It's hanging there.
Wow.
But like, yeah, it's like just beautiful looking sets. And like, I mean, the Collinswood. You know, where they live. I mean, it's lush. It's lush. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's production design is beautiful. And I think it would be kind of provocative if you said it didn't look good. I guess you could not be a fan of the story. I was looking through Tim Burton's movies ranked by the Tomato Meter, and this is his lowest rated movie. I didn't know if you knew that.
I know, it's rated very low. Well, it's got 35%.
Yeah, the next closest one is Planet of the Apes, which is 44. Do you think it deserves a 35? Because you recommended this movie. I mean, what do you love? You said it's kind of like a comfort food movie, right? It's a good hangout picture movie, I think. Is that, or what do you like about it?
Yeah. So, yeah, like when I first saw it, I just really enjoyed it for like what it was, the fantastical, like, you know, you've got mythical elements like vamps and witches and werewolves and ghosts, and like it was just a fun take for me, very like goth and like a bit of an even emo goth like vibe. I just really enjoyed it. I loved the little jokes that they added. I don't know, a lot of people were like, jokes didn't land. I thought, well, I still laugh at the jokes, so like I enjoyed all of that. I did read though that it bombed with you guys. It actually did well in the foreign market, so maybe that's why I like it, because I'm not American. I don't know.
Yeah, it made, what, $80 million in the States, $245 million overall. So, I mean, that's not bad.
It's not bad if you, like.
Do you think $80 million's bombing? I guess it is for a $150 million movie. I'm surprised, because it's a hard sell, though, isn't it? Just this sort of... Is it a hard sell, this movie?
The thing... I do remember at the time, people were very tired of the Burton, Johnny Depp connection. Like, again. And of course, Helena is also in this. And ugh, like, people were getting tired of the whole, like, you know, them doing everything over and over. And I get that. But I also think it's, it feels so unfair for the rest of the cast that really did well. I mean, I told you, like, one of the reasons I love this movie so much is the women in it. They freaking slay. I love them. Like, they really own their scenes. I don't know. But also, at the same time, I do understand that the story is not necessarily, like, gets everyone excited. I wouldn't say, like, the story excites me either. I'm more there for the spectacle and, like, the actors, like, what they do. I mean, Chloe is my favorite. She's a girl werewolf. Like, she's got posters of Iggy Pop and Jimi Hendrix in her room. She's moody and emo. I mean, relatable. Michelle Pfeiffer is amazing. I don't know. I really dig it. It's kind of adds like a little Pride and Prejudice and zombie vibe for me, which is interesting because the guy that ended up like coming in to help write the script wrote the novel of Pride and Prejudice and Zombie. Graham Smith. Yes. So yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to tell people you must like this movie because it has its faults and stuff. I think maybe it was too slow for some people. I liked the slow. I liked the, let's just stay with these characters in this room for a bit. I want to see their, like, faces and expressions and little quirk. It's a comfort movie. It's an easy watch. I think I've watched it, like, 8 or 9 times since it was released here in South Africa.
I guess you have a great point about it's at an hour and, 53 minutes, Burton definitely lets the characters breathe. You have the one thing, though, it's... Like there's a lot of breathing, but then they don't really pursue the relationship between Heathcote and Depp that far. Like, they spend a couple scenes together, and then they talk. So I wonder if, because in the beginning of the film, you have Depp kind of being a brat, becoming a vampire, put in a coffin, and then you switch over to Bella Heathcote's role, where she goes to the mansion, meets the family. 25 minutes later, Depp comes out, and then she's sort of put to the side, and then you just get kind of a nice hangout picture. Until the end, when he saves her at the lovers, where she throws herself off the rock, and this time he saves her. But is it weird to explain this movie as a hangout picture? Because you just get different little vignettes. You get Chloe sitting in a room with Barnabas going, "You're weird. You're all weird. Uptight." And like, she's the choices she made in this movie just make me laugh. Just, "You're weird." Yeah. The hate that she, I feel like she's just spewing hate at this guy. And she's like, "I think he called me a prostitute." I'm like, "Woman of the night."
Yeah. But she's spewing hate at everyone. I mean, like, yeah. To be fair, you know, she's just like learning how to be a werewolf and whatever. She's like, "Get out of my face." I mean, I wish I could just like show teeth at people and they can't be like sensitive or annoyed. They're like, "Oh, she's a werewolf. It makes sense. Cool.
And then you learn later on in a throwaway line that she got bit by a werewolf when she was a toddler. So do you... So Jacqueline or Angelique paid a werewolf as a werewolf. So the werewolf has control. So when you turn into a werewolf, you're basically Zanandi, but a werewolf. So then the thing just goes and bites an infant and turns her into a werewolf?
That's apparently how it works.
That's interesting. Spicing
it
up.
I was wondering about that, like, because... I don't know. Do you trust anything Angelique says?
Yeah, that's true. No. Seems like she's just trying to get a rise out of people.
There was this weird thing with Carolyn and her mother, Elizabeth, at the Alice Cooper happening, where, like, Carolyn got on stage, and before Cooper started singing, she did that whole, "Mommy, where's Daddy?" blah, blah thing, and, like, Michelle Pfeiffer was just looking at her child like, "I want to strangle you, teenager." And, but they never mentioned, like, what happened to her dad and stuff. So I've always liked the idea that yeah, he's got something, some way to do with it, which is why I would have loved this, like, to have a sequel. But yeah, honestly, my personal, like, real honest opinion about this is I would have loved if they rather did, like, a TV series with this movie, because I think, yeah, it's difficult to have all these relationships really, like, you know, play out in depth on screen in, like, a movie that can't be over 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, Roger, Elizabeth's brother, like, played by Johnny Lee Miller. Jeez, what, like, was he actually really necessary in the movie? He was just, like, another deadbeat dad. Like, yeah. I get that we had, that was kind of a theme. It was, like, all these women making do because the men, you know, were mm-hmm. that reliable and either left or, like, you know, I think Angelique felt, yeah, I think Angelique felt Barnabas wasn't reliable and that's why she buried him for 106 years. But yeah, like I did feel like, I mean, Willie Loomis, like played by Jackie O'Haley, I so love that guy.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
I mean, he had more freaking screen time than Johnny Lee Miller did, you know, like that mm-hmm. his character did. So I do think that this could be such a lucky, great TV series. I think it has a whole, it's really got that written on it, which, I mean, the original was. It was a soap opera show thing. And that's also the thing, like Burton said, you know, because he was asked, what about a sequel? Because there were rumors and he was like, no, the whole structure was supposed to be like soap opera and like that's the structure and it's done. No sequel. And I was like, dude, let the people make a sequel or like, you know, or do something different because there's still so much to explore, not only with these characters, but just with, like with this whole interesting mystical world. Yeah, I just love that, the spectacle and the mystical of it all.
I guess you're right about Johnny Lee Miller, because I guess maybe they wanted to appease TV fans, but his character was not needed at all. No. And then you have the doctor. I mean, you got to have her in there. I mean, like, you can't make, he really couldn't make a movie without Helena Bonham Carter in there because she's great. But no, I liked her. You can't get rid of her with the blood transfusions because they did that in the show. I guess she turned Barnabas into a human one time with blood transfusions. She didn't turn herself into a vampire, which I thought was interesting. But no, I guess you got to have her. I like their interactions. This sounds weird, but did you... Obviously, Depp is pulling a bit in this movie, but he felt he was bitten big time. Everyone else felt quite natural. Like, did you buy Barnabas? Did you like Depp's performance?
Parts of it. I think, like, his line delivery is great. The man mm-hmm. knows how to deliver a line, you know? That's, like, why he's been in so many things. Yeah, like, I was actually talking to Corey about it, and I was like, okay, well, if Depp was such a big problem for people in this movie, then who would you replace him with? Like, let's do the recasting, Mark. Like, who else would you think? Because here's the thing, everyone was way more natural. I mean, even Eva, that is such a great character actress, and does play, like, her character over the top in this, even she did feel... Like, in a way, maybe because we're used to it doing that, I don't know. But, I mean, we're used to Johnny also doing character work. So, I don't know. But I totally get what everyone is saying about it. And, like, I did feel at times he was a bit flat, almost. I think some of his scenes could have been cut, honestly. And maybe given more screen time to some of the other characters. But, yeah, who would you cast if you can recast Barnabas Collins?
Timothy Olyphant, would he be good? What do you think? Walton Goggins?
Maybe.
You can't have them anchor $150 million. This movie would drop to a $30 million budget if Timothy Olyphant was in it. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
So are we keeping the $150 million budget?
Yeah. Like, let's say...
Nick Cage?
Say yes, because Burton can get that kind of budget, so...
Robert Downey Jr., Nick Cage.
Robert Downey Jr. could actually maybe have... I could see that, maybe... Like,
that's like Nick Cage is a vampire. I'm a vampire. Oh, yeah. Okay. And then, so who could anchor? If this is $150 million, I'm sort of looking at the time of who could anchor this movie. Matt Damon? No. Colin Farrell? No. Yeah, Colin Farrell? He was a good vampire in Fright Night. Could he do that?
Maybe.
Because he teamed up with Burton later on. Let's see. Who else is there? Liam Neeson?
Nah, Vito.
Ryan Gosling?
Vito.
Daniel Craig?
I also thought about him, but no.
Chris Evans?
No.
Paul Bettany?
Oh, wow. I'm just going to say no to everything. Yeah. Now we're on to something.
He'd be good. And he was, at this time, he was spearheading, he was starring in Priest and Legion. So he was sort of a hot commodity.
In A Knight's Tale, he was great with the whole Shakespearean vibe. So Paul Bettany.
Okay.
Oh, and yes, all the girls would want him. And yeah, no, I can see that.
Yeah.
Paul Bettany, nice one, Mark. Nice.
I'm gonna give you a few more. Vin Diesel. Wait, what about Robert Pattinson? He would not want to play a vampire, so never mind.
Because I thought about Robert, but that's the thing. Like, he's been a vamp, and I don't know, he's way too serious. Like, you need someone that's got the quirk, because Barnabas has a quirk. Like, he's funny. He needs to be funny, you know? Like, so, yeah.
But not knowing he's funny. I think Bettany would be good.
Bettany, definitely. No, that's a good one.
James Marsden? Wait, what about Skarsgård? True Blood?
Mm-mm. Too serious.
Jason Bateman, Ryan Reynolds?
Ryan Reynolds. Imagine. I think Ryan Reynolds could have done a good Roger Collins. Like, I don't want to diss on Johnny because Johnny Lee Miller because
his fault, right? It's not his fault.
He didn't say, "Ooh, I only want to be in four scenes."
Yeah, and then leave abruptly.
But I think Ryan could have done a fun Roger, like a bit more of the sneakiness because I didn't feel enough of the sneakiness. And it was like 3/4 into the movie and we really only started seeing Roger Collins being all... Because at the beginning, he was just like broody and like he doesn't want to be there. That's like nothing, though. That's what they all looked and felt like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I felt Chloe had more of a distinct take on the family... how do you say? The family conflict than her uncle, Roger. So, yeah.
One of my
girls slayed in this. The girls are great.
I'm going to give you three more options. Tom Hardy.
Vito.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey.
No.
Ewan McGregor.
Matthew McConaughey maybe as Willy Loomis, although I wouldn't actually, Jackie or Haley is amazing.
Ed Norton.
But no, I think idea time's over. I think I did.
I nailed it.
I don't think we're going to get someone better than Paul Bettany, honestly. Like,
I think that's a good choice right there, Paul Bettany. That's a good one. And
I think so.
And listen, I guess I'm not hating on Depp here. I just, after reading so much about this movie, it's unfair though, but the Depp fatigue in 2012 was real. Just reading the comments about this. And that's, I mean, but his run though, I was just looking at this earlier. So in 2010, he had The Tourist. That movie made money. And then he did Rango. That was huge. And then he did Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. That movie made over $1 billion. It was huge. And he also produced Hugo. Wow. And he also, let's see, Alice in Wonderland was 2010 too. Jeez Louise. This guy was just cashing checks. So Alice in Wonderland, The Tourist, then he had Rum Diary. That wasn't that big. But then he did produced Hugo, Rango, Pirates, and then he popped into Dark Shadows. So I guess it was probably Tourist that came out. Remember, it got a Golden Globe nomination and everyone was making fun of it. I think that sort of maybe opened the door for the hate. And then Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, which I think that's one of the... I remember watching it and going, I'm never going to watch this movie again. And then people maybe were annoyed by that. And then Dark Shadows came out. And I think it was... And then Lone Ranger suffered even further after Dark Shadows. So yeah, it seems like there was a fatigue, I think, that hit, which hurt this movie, which is sad.
It is. There was a fatigue, and there was also the argument that Johnny's just playing like a pseudo drunk in every movie. Like, his characters are always looking like they're drunk. And that was like irritating people. And I get what they were saying. But yeah, I felt like in certain movies that just worked. So like, don't know what to tell you. I do get that. Like, Johnny was just everywhere, and him and Burton just doing all the things. And I think, say, like, you know, Burton rather cast someone like Paul Bettany in this movie, I think it would have gotten people more excited because, ooh, a fresh face? What? Like,
So.
And that, like I say, that annoys me because I think the movie didn't get a lot of love specifically because of people just eye-rolling at Johnny all the time. But then while you're eye-rolling at him, you're missing everyone else, like, doing great, giving great performances.
One thing I did like was just they stuck to the fact that Barnabas is a murderer. He wipes out those people who are at the construction site, and then he kills all the, for lack of a better word, hippies. He wipes them out, and it's just unapologetic about it. Just a murderer. But then I guess he uses the line saying, "You did this to me. You put this thirst in me." But I did think that was a nice, nasty twist of storytelling that he just murders the hippies. That made me happy because, I mean, I don't know. Did you see that coming? Did you think he was going to murder those hippies?
No, I actually didn't. I also didn't see him murdering Dr. Julia Hoffman.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, till the end, and you know what? And he like, got around with the woman as well. It was like, he's, like, madly in love with Victoria, supposedly, but he's getting it down with Dr. Julia.
Yeah.
He's having a gravity-defying romp with Angelique. Like, it's, this guy... Like, he's not a good guy.
No.
And I mean, that's the movie. It's Dark Shadows. It's like, this is not good, like, people and, like, everyone has their dark secrets. And I mean, that's also fun. I like the little twist on it. Like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we're just watching this kind of, yeah, he's kind of a scuzz bucket. When we first meet him, we don't like him right off the bat. And then he murders a bunch of people. Interesting.
Exactly.
Would you put your macrame where Michelle Pfeiffer's character, where Elizabeth Collins? Would you do that?
I mean, the real question is, would I have macrame, Mark?
Would you put your rackets in a secret hideaway?
I do like how they put their, like, kitsch doesn't really work with the decor, really, stuff. They just, like, hide it in secret rooms where no one can see them. So the decor looks, like, all goth and old and antique. But then you've got this secret room with these bright, colorful macrame, all these tennis rackets or whatever rackets they are, like... Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's cute. Like, and that's also the thing. I think if this was, like, I think you can do such a, like, a series with the show because you can explore that house more as well. I know, like, in the original TV show, there's someone living in, like, an attic room, like, hidden there as well. And I think you can do a lot of neat things with it and keep it fun, because that's what I liked about the movie. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it wasn't taking itself seriously.
No, not at all.
Yeah, not at all.
And that leads to I keep going back to this. I'm sorry, but it keeps going. Like, it feels like a hangout picture, because it's just a series of moments between people.
Yeah.
And then you get to the end, but it's just, you just kind of put it on. Some of those movies, you could just, if it's on, you just put it on. Because there's really no emotional investment to anybody in here. Sorry if you had, like, but there's none of that. It's just sort of...
It's great.
Cheeky, cheeky performances, beautiful costuming. I remember Eva Green's, red dress? They put so much of the marketing on that, and she's not even in it much in that. But, I mean, Colleen Atwood, she crushed it. It just looks... Yeah, it's a good hangout picture. Because there's a story, but it's very, very loose. There's a love story.
Loose.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more like, you know, if you think story and you think mythology, it's way more that. It's so loose that it's more like, so here's some mythology happening and here's some characters and they're in this world and we're not going to tell you what and all the details and stuff. We'll give you something, but, you know, it's just here they are. And this is like a little thing that happened. And it's so loose and so like open to so much. And yeah, like you said, I love the fact that you just don't feel anything. Sometimes you just want to watch a movie and like the only thing you want to feel is just delighted by the fun, you know, because that's the only thing I feel when I watch it. I'm just delighted. I laugh still at all the jokes. I sing along with all the amazing songs.
Yeah, like, the soundtrack's legit.
Oh, I love the soundtrack. Love it.
The Carpenters. She's a carpenter chick. Oh, I know how to build stuff.
You're weird.
Yeah, you're really weird. Just the malice on her face. But I talk about that with movies. So, A Knight's Tale. Their guy that they're with dies. He just takes on the helmet. They conveniently find a great forger that can go with them everywhere. Eventually he gets found out. He's in trouble for about 3 seconds. Then he comes back. The king's like, yo, you're in. Then he wins. It's the chill. Like, even the relationship, they have
there
one fight. They have one fight. And he's just kind of being surly to her. She's like, hey, what are we wearing tonight? And he's like, I don't care. And then 3 minutes later, they're cool. That's what I love. That's why I can rewatch that movie over and over. And in this one, he comes back. They have their convenient fortune. They start their fishing business up. They seem to be doing okay. They blow some things up. Alice Cooper pops up in there. There's some songs. And then it ends. But it all just looks... I mean, the cavernous stages that they had are beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I love the production. I mean, this is a... This is kind of a last of its kind, do you think, where a director gets a blank check, gets a $150 million check to adapt an old school Dark Shadows thing. The director just has so much power, and then they make this. So I kind of embrace that this is a weird one-off that might not happen too much in the future.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Like, oh man, every time I watch the concert or the happening with Alice Cooper, I'm always looking at like the sets and the stage and like him performing and all the extras, and I'm like, man, I would have loved being an extra on that one.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like we've been extras on some film sets and stuff, and yeah, some are definitely cooler than others. I think this would have been such a cool scene to be an extra in. Like, you've got like Alice Cooper performing, you've got all these like, oh, the set looks so great, the lights, the costumes, the, oh man.
This is one of those where even if you don't want to be an actor, you're not interested to be an extra, if you just love film, I mean, being on set with Burton, all these amazing actors, like even Colleen Atwood could be there, or, you know, Bruno Del Bono, I mean, 5-time Oscar nominee, and Rick Heinrichs, who, I mean, that dude was an art director on Batman Returns. Just to see them work as someone who loves film, I would love to have been a fly in the wall in this movie.
Love.
Or be a PA, an additional PA during the background heavy days. That'd have been sweet just to be on set and see all that. Oh, that'd be cool. Working on a Burton film would be nice. And also, he had gone really CG visual effects heavy with Chocolate Factory and Alice. So it was nice to see him go back to sets. Now, listen, there's a lot of VFX in this movie. A lot of the backgrounds, a lot of the fishing town and all that. But
yeah, but not all of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not...
Not like Alice
Exactly. It's nice to see things built. And it's so much desire. It's cool. As someone who likes film, it's really good to look at. I kept saying, that's a good shot. Well, that's a good shot. Well, that's a good shot. That looks pretty.
Yeah.
And when he first walked into Collinswood, there's a Collinswood, Collinsport, the Collins, geez Louise, there's a Tom Collins, so that's a drink. But when he first walked into that Collinwood, it's huge. And sure, there might be some VFX going on in the background, some green screens, but they must have had a big warehouse to shoot in. That'd have been pretty cool to see.
For sure. I love it when he gets there and like you see that big pumpkin patch where like Willie is like getting drunk among his big pumpkins. And yeah, I think everything is just so like it works. But then also Collinsport is like also looks like this tiny cute little like port side like little town. I love the sets in this.
Yeah,
it works.
It's very lively, that town. A lot of people on the streets, well dressed. It's kind of like an affluent weekend stop, would you say?
Yeah, and also like I loved when I watched it earlier in the week, like the Collins, and I'm like, the colonizers.
Oh, is that?
Oh, that's amazing. You've got that little thing playing in the movie, definitely. I mean, yeah.
Also, there's a great barf gag.
Oh, yeah, the barf gag, though. I hate barf gags. it's just so gross and over the top for me. But seeing Eva do it, Eva Green can do no wrong in my eyes, I guess.
That was really her barf, too. No, I'm just... I can do it. Well, I can do it. I'll be right back. Yeah,
that was great. I didn't see that coming at all. Let me tell you that. I didn't see it coming.
I guess this movie does have surprises. You're like, wait, is Johnny Lee Miller leaving? Did that just happen with the doctor, with Helena Bonham Carter? Like, there's some surprises in it. It definitely has that going for it. So I got that going for me. Hey, yeah. Hey, how about this? Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we will talk more Dark Shadows. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I did something really challenging. I ranked the 8 movies that... A subjective ranking of the Johnny Depp and Tim Burton movies. Do you want to hear them?
Yes, please.
Okay. Edward Scissorhands is number 1.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That movie's just stuck with me. It's just a beautiful, weird oddity. 2 is Sleepy Hollow. I think it's one of the best-looking movies, almost shot entirely in stage. Just a sumptuous... beautiful looking movie, then Ed Wood, then Sweeney Todd, mm-hmm. then Corpse Bride, then Dark Shadows, then Alice in Wonderland, then Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And you could flip Charlie and Alice, however. They're just so, I don't know, I don't like those movies. They're fine. And they're well rated. I'm not a fan of them.
Same. Listen, same. Those two, I don't get those two either. So it's interesting that we feel exactly the same about them. Charlie and Alice didn't really. Yeah, I loved Sweeney Todd. But I mean, I'm a big Sweeney Todd fan, like, in general, of the stage musical. So, yeah, I would probably rate Sweeney. But your list is pretty legit. And I love Sleepy Hollow. Like, I'd probably put Sleepy Hollow, Sweeney Todd, Edward Scissorhands, that would be, and the rest, just like you said.
Hey. Yeah, those three are pretty interchangeable. If I saw one of those three on number one, I'm like, yeah, it's cool. I get it. Makes sense.
I haven't seen Edward. That's why I didn't, like, put him in my top three. That's the one Tim Burton, Johnny, I still haven't watched.
Yeah, I mean, that one's good. What, Martin Landau beat Samuel Jackson for the Best Supporting Actor Oscar that year? But it has a lot of personality. It's really scrappy, and it's just, you can tell it's a love letter to cinema. I dig it. It's so good.
Nice.
But I don't know what it is about Edward Scissorhands. That movie just has, lives in my head. You can just see it so clearly. It's such an interesting vision from that film.
But listen, Mark, I mean, like, you know, we talk about Dark Shadows. It's a movie where you don't feel anything. Edward Scissorhands is the opposite of that. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, then's the feels right there.
And I grew up in Florida,
and it's
too.
It's fun. And it's got, like, yeah, it's got a lot of emotion. It's got a lot more than Dark Shadows. So I get it. Like, and it's a classic. And it's from our childhoods. And yeah, great movie.
It wasn't rated. I think it was PG, PG-13, so you could watch it as a kid. And I think it's one of those neat movies to watch when you're a kid, with like A Nightmare on Christmas and those more mature PG, PG-13 movies that you watch. Like, they stick with you so much more when you're little and you watch them. Just the weird haircuts and also they filmed
it. Those haircuts, those women that just wanted to get with them. And like, I'm a kid and I'm like, ooh, I'm feeling this. I'm feeling something funny.
And the shrubbery, all that stuff, and just, you know, you have the angry boyfriend, and I just dig it. It's a good film. So, I mean, yeah, I think if any of those popped around, and actually, these are subjective lists, and I mean, there's probably, so if there's over 200,000 ways to rank the 9 Fast and Furious movies, there's probably about that same number for these 8, so maybe a little less than 200,000. So it doesn't really matter how people rank them, because there's so many different ways you could go about it. It's fun. It's good.
I'm showing my teeth.
Yeah.
Woof. I'm a real wolf. Deal with it, okay?
But they, you know, they wrecked that in the trailer. They showed that she was a werewolf in the trailer for the movie that I saw.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
I never watched the trailer. I'm so glad I didn't.
They cut to her in a corner as a werewolf. So the whole movie, I'm just like, Chloe Grace, werewolf. Well, when's this going to happen? And then at the end it happened. I'm like, oh, okay. And I kind of like that. I like that Eva Green hands it to her, though, because she's just not good at being a werewolf yet. She's young. She's 16.
Yeah.
So I like that. I like that Eva just handed it to her. Like, she didn't immediately become this world-stopping force. You're not going to take
absolutely
on Angelique as a
yeah,
new
no,
werewolf.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, like, she's in cahoots with the devil. A rookie werewolf ain't going to do it.
What does he call her? Like, Mephistopheles? And he just calls her every name in the book.
Every name. Oh, well, yeah. Listen, the lines in this movie is also, like, so quirky. Like, what is he... At one point, I actually got the quote up here that I love. He said, oh, yeah, I've already prepared my counter-proposal. It reads thusly. You may strategically place your wonderful lips upon my posterior and kiss it repeatedly.
Jeez,
it's weird. So funny. I'm like, what? How even... I just love it. It's so cheesy. And that's the thing. This movie has a lot of cheese. And I like me some cheese every now and then.
It's a cheesy movie, but not in a bad way. But it's weird where, you know what's odd? You have this beautiful production design, and Tim Burton, he does have a sense of humor, but you're used to this moody aesthetic. But then you get jokes about him smashing his head on a keyboard and making music, or looking at a lava lamp, or pressing the emergency game, where it's just, you have this, it throws you out a little bit, because it's just such a moody looking picture, and then you have Cheek in it, which it creates a... Burton knows what he's doing. This is quite the unique tone. It's a gutsy move, would you say, to combine that or no?
I mean, that's like part of what I liked about it, because I think if like we didn't have all these quirky, like cheesy stuff, it would have been way too serious. And then it would just have been a straight, like moody movie. And I don't actually know if I would have liked it that much, honestly. I know like a lot of people said, well, Barnabas like trying to get to grips with the 1970s gets old and whatever, but I don't know. I thought that was such a like a thing to play with throughout. Because it's kind of like, you know, this family dealing with the past and struggling to, and their family lineage and everything that's happened to them and the curse. But then you've got him coming into the present that's kind of like in his world, the future. I don't know. I love the quirkiness where he rips the back of the TV. He's like, reveal yourself, tiny songstress. I mean, I love those moments. I
We
don't know.
have a Chevy.
We have a Chevy. I mean, like, I get that, like, not everyone's going to enjoy it. But I personally did.
I think you're
But I
like,
guess I'm weird,
you're making
so.
me like it more.
Yay.
So, oh gosh. So what are your favorite moments? I mean, we've talked about so much of these, but what are your three moments that just make you keep watching it eight, nine times?
Okay, well,
They
I
tried
think
stoning me
when.
once. Are you stoned? They tried that
Yeah, are you
once.
stoned? Yeah, like I said, I love the thing with the TV that I just said. I love the like little him and Carolyn, their discussion in the room. I don't know, that also feels so cool, like he's going to like the girl, like asking her stuff, but she's just like, dude, you are so weird. And I love how she's so straight, you know, like her character just in general. I mean, it's more about me watching the actresses, her and Michelle Pfeiffer, Chloe Michelle Pfeiffer and Eva. I think that's actually part of the big reason. It's like there are a lot of little moments that I love, but I think I watch it for the women in this and the amazing soundtrack. I love the
Oh
soundtrack.
gosh, it's so good. What a loaded. It's just all the songs made me so happy. It just keeps
All
on
the
having good
songs.
jams.
I love it.
And
Season of the Witch is always a classic. I mean, it's just so good.
I do like how they kind of
Superfly.
take agency from Barnabas, where Elizabeth just works him up to go start the town back up again. She just sort of plays him to do it. And the way that what Angelique just keeps, putting him in coffins.
Yeah,
And at the end, the
the
final fight
Shia.
scene, right? It's Elizabeth and Carolyn doing the big heavy lifting in that. So it's yeah, I like that
Yeah.
better, just watching that. Like watching Michelle Pfeiffer fight and do all that. And it did kind of lose me at the end though. Poor Bella Heathcote. I mean, I know this sounds bad, but Burton definitely has his he hires he has a look he likes. And I think Bella Heathcote fit that look really well, like the Burton blonde, I guess, for lack of a better word. I don't know. But she kind of got the short deal of all this, right? Because I don't really remember any of her dialogue. And I just remember at the end, she walks to the cliff. But they never spend enough time to, like when he's diving after her at the end, the only thought in my head was, hey, this is a great looking shot. It wasn't, oh, is he going to save her? They just really, I don't know. That's the one thing. The love story in this movie does not get, you can tell he's not interested in it, Tim Burton.
Yeah, and I think you're right with like Bella's character, Victoria. It's like, you know, it starts off where she's like, you know, going to meet this family, and you can already see something's off because they show us like she's using a different name, she's using an alias. And then when she meets Elizabeth, they're like, you know, chatting, and Elizabeth's like, I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions. And she was like, what do you think of the president? And Vicky's like, never met him. And then at one point she's like, do you think the sexes should be equal? And Vicky's like, heavens no, men would become quite unmanageable. And like that's such a cute line, and it like shows this like a character comes off pretty strong in the beginning, but then it kind of like fades. Then it's just more about every time we see her, it's more about the backstory, you know, that's slowly unraveling, where we see, okay, Josette is there for some reason, and then we find out why. I think, yeah, her character kind of got like caught up in the madness that is the Collins family, which kind of then works for the story, I guess, because like she is the outsider that comes into this family. And well, yeah, if that doesn't turn you mad, you know.
You know what's interesting? Normally that character, maybe I've been so primed. That's interesting that you brought that up because I didn't even think about it. Maybe I'm so primed to you bring in the outsider into something strange so that they can have it explained to them. So it's, if you just started with people, a weird family, you don't know them. That's why it's smart to bring in, you know, her character, Bella Heathcote's character, because then you can see the world, meet everybody. Everything seems weird because it's through here, but then they drop that. It's a, I don't know. This is the one complaint I have. Yeah.
But that's, yeah, they don't really explain much. They don't, like.
I mean, is that bad, or are we so used to a character coming in and everything being explained that we react negatively to it? Or do you think that's just not the best script writing?
I don't know. I think you can argue it both ways. Like, I can see how people can say that's a problem. But like I say, it kind of worked for me because I felt like this was more a world, you know, with all these characters, because there's a lot of characters in here.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're trying to pay homage to this original TV series. So they're putting a lot of those storylines into it. So it's kind of like, yeah, do you sacrifice that? Should they just have like stuck to like, but that's the thing. How many of the storylines do you then take? Because it is this whole mythical, mystical world. I think it's tricky. Like, again, that's why I think this is just like, it would make a great revival TV series, because I think it's, I think that's why I have a problem judging it, because I'm not sure how you would do that otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what could make it better, so I'm not gonna say it sucks. Story wise, yeah, it sucks.
I dig the characters. I'm here for the characters, but then at the same time, I'm also big on story. I don't really like it when movies don't give me good story. But I guess I didn't feel the story was that bad. It was a bit thin, sure, but I don't know. I love watching all these people on screen doing all these quirky, weird things that doesn't always have the precise reasoning or detail given to us, but it just works for them. I don't know.
Does that make neither. Sense? No, yeah, absolutely. No, it's, I wouldn't know what to change, but I think enough of these moments and the look makes it worth watching. It's the hangout picture. Hey, so how about we do something real quick before we get out of here? So for Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook, you can go to the page, like it, and we do these fun polls on there. We'll do random tournaments. But I was thinking you and I, since we just got done with Dark Month, you and I covered We Summon the Darkness, The Dark and the Wicked. I figured we could do some, we'll each pick five, you pick one, I pick one, horror movies that just make us feel good. How does that sound? That's what I pitched to you,
okay,
right?
Cool. Just cool. Like fun horror movies.
Yeah, that put a smile on your face. So people are getting murdered, but you just leave it happy. Does that make sense?
Yep.
You're not exhausted.
You feel good. You feel good afterwards. Yeah. Jazz. Okay. Okay.
All right. So what's your first pick? Cool.
Okay. I'm going to start off with an old classic that I love. Idle Hands.
Oh,
I love Idle Hands. I watched it again like a couple of months ago at the beginning of the year. Still holds up. Still so much fun. Like, yeah, Idle Hands for the win.
Just
love
fun.
It.
All right, I'm taking Tremors because that movie, so many people get murdered, but I watched it so many. I bought the Arrow Blu-ray with new documentaries, and it's just people get murdered, but it's fun, and you just like everybody. So that's the one I'm picking.
Nice. I love it.
And it never weighs on you, right? It's just fun.
No. It is a fun movie to watch, definitely. Tremors is a good one. Okay. Then I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with a recent one that I also watched that came out this year that I love and I think is very fun, even though, like, all the craziness that goes down in it. I love it. It's Willy's Wonderland.
Oh, that made me so happy.
Oh, dude, I love...
That's so fun.
I think it's my favorite movie this year so far.
Oh, yeah. It's so fun. It just makes me happy. It's so... He just cleans and... Oh, yeah, he's so cool. I love it.
I was literally cheering. Like, when the gator kill is my favorite kill of the whole movie.
The bathroom.
And, like, When, yeah, like, I went, like, they were like, I literally, before they went for the jaw, I was like, go for the jaw, go for the jaw. And they started going for the jaw, and I'm like, yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Fun. So
wait,
fun.
No, actually, that wasn't the bathroom. That was the...
No, the bathroom was with the Kong thing.
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah,
gator
yeah.
Was in the other room, the room.
Oh, I love
the
it.
The room.
So, you know what? I'm going to do one that we recently talked about. I have to. I'm going to say We Summon the Darkness.
Nice.
Right?
Nice.
Because that movie's fun.
Yeah, someone should. Oh, we had a lot of fun talking about it as well.
And it never weighed on you. It's just enjoyable. I'm picking that.
100%. Yeah, that's such a fun movie. There are so many. Ooh, I'm going to go with, yeah, not everyone's probably going to, like, agree with me, but I don't care. This is my list. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with The Dead Don't Die. I love it.
Oh, I can't believe. Oh, that's so good. What a great pick.
I love The Dead Don't Die.
Oh, man.
It's a fun movie. It's so many awesome moments in it. I know not everyone dug it, but I did.
It's perfection with Posey Juarez.
Oh, man. Yeah, some great actors in there.
Fantastic. I love it.
Moment.
You read the whole script.
Love it.
The hipsters from Cleveland. I'm gonna take Life After Beth because I just think it's a very funny, weird gonzo movie with Aubrey Plaza as a zombie.
It's nice. That's another one I still haven't seen. So sell me on it, Mark. Sell us.
Well, it's just Dane DeHaan and Aubrey Plaza, and she turns into a zombie, but she's still kind of human. So then Dane stays with her, and then it all goes to crap. But she's just an angry zombie lady running around, and it's wonderful. It's weird. John C. Reilly's in it. It's just, I left it feeling very light and happy. So I'm going to take that one.
Love it. Ooh, you've got a good list. I'm going to have to pull something out of here.
I have one that I love, but I'm afraid it's too much of a ringer. But it's one of my all-time great-time horror movies. But I don't know if I'm going to pick it because it's... I have two of them, actually, I love.
Listen, no, let's, like, ringers, it's fine. Let's say that's fine. Because, I mean, our lists are always, like, pretty, like, legit. So, like, plus, it's our rules. Let's do it. Okay, right. But I'm going to go with... before you pick it, I'm going to go with The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Oh, no. Yes, that's so good.
I mean, I needed on one of mine. I needed it on one of mine eventually, since you always pick it when we're up against each other.
Such a great movie. Some people think it's really heavy, and there are heavy themes, but I know how it's played comedically. And I understand all the themes, but I still enjoy it so much, and it makes me so happy.
Absolutely. And again, I laugh so much in that movie because, like, he just, again, it's that showing the ridiculous of man angle, and it shows it so well, and, like, just how absurd the anger can get. And, I mean, yeah, it's definitely, it's got heavy themes in it, but, yeah, I feel good afterwards. I think it was, like, executed pretty well. Like you say, we understand the themes, and we can, like, process it as we're watching the movie. So it's a good one.
I'm sorry to do this, but I'm taking Drag Me to Hell because, you know, it's the first movie I ever watched with Megan, and she loved it. I loved it. It's just a blast. And I think it's just gonzo. It's Sam Raimi at his weird, crazy, gonzo, cheeky, fun, out there best. And it ends darkly,
absolutely,
but it tells you it's going to end that way anyway. You know what's going to happen. You know what's in that envelope. And it's just one of my favorite horror movies ever made. So I had to pick that.
No, totally. Like, it was on my maybe list as well. Like, that's a good one. It's everything you say. It's really great. Drag Me to Hell is great.
All right, what's your final one?
Oh, why do I have to pick only one? So many. Okay, I'm going to, like, mention stuff that I'm probably not going to pick, but that's great. Okay, I love Trick or Treat, but, I mean, that's a big ringer. Love Trick or Treat.
No, pick it.
It's so
pick
fun.
It.
That's who so
cares?
Lucky.
Do it.
I love, no, stop.
I love Drag Me to Hell.
I love Ready or Not. That was also very, it's funny. So the first time I watched Ready or Not, I actually didn't enjoy it that much. I don't know what, I think, like, me and you, we talk a lot about people's expectations and how that can get in the way. So honestly, I think I had a bit like of an expectation. I didn't really know what, but I think I had like an idea and it wasn't that. But then the second time I watched it, I love this movie. This is a fun movie.
Oh, it's so good.
It definitely got better on the rewatch for me. I love Ready or Not. That's a fun one. I love Troll Hunter, but I think I've used it in too many drops already. I'm going to go with, what do we do in the Shadows as a Ringer? I'm going to go.
Pick it. I have Dragon to Hell. That's, and Tremors. Come on now.
I'm going, okay. Cabin in the Woods or Freddy versus Jason?
Oh, I can't pick, but I would say it's Cabin in the Woods for me because I was just laughing at the end.
I love both. Cabin is probably my favorite. Oh, I've got Jennifer's Body as well. Oh, it's too much. Okay, Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Woods it is.
I mean, just the world ends. Everything's destroyed. It's cheeky. The merman gets him. He wipes out a zombie with a trowel. Oh, it makes me so happy.
So many monsters. I love the, commentary. Oh, yeah, no, it's great. It's great. The intro also. It's probably one of my favorite intros. We're just saying a lot. They are great horror movie intros. But I just love that intro. It's so funny.
So I wanted to say Freaky, but I'm not going to do it. Vampires vs. the Bronx is really fun. Babysitter I had fun with, but it gets a little heavy with all the kills. One Cut of the Dead is wonderful. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies makes me happy. But
I've got all of these on my list, yeah, too.
Oh, they're so good.
I love it. I love it.
But you're going to hate me for this, because this might be a ringer, but I love this movie, and it makes me really happy, and I think it features one of my favorite performances. And the director directed Freaky, which we're going to be talking about soon. But I'm going to say Happy Death Day.
Of course. I know you love that very much. Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. That's fine.
It's fun. I know, and it's nice. And Jessica Roth is so good in it. And it's just a cheeky, low-budget movie that I love, and it makes me happy. But you know what? That's too much of a ringer. I'm going to pick something really random.
No, go for it. That's fine with me.
I mean,
I've got Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. That, you know, that was voted the number one horror film of to 21st century. That was the first major big hit I had on MFF. So I figured out the best horror films and I did a vote and thousands of people voted on it. Then AV Club and Cabin in the Woods put it on the millions of followers on their Facebook page, put it on their thing. Best horror movie of the 21st century. That was my first big hit in 2015.
That's making me very happy.
Yeah.
Making me very happy. I love it. I love this movie. And I hate it because there were a lot of criticism to this movie. And I was like, now, I think you all should just watch it again. Yeah. It's so great. So I love hearing that. No, actually, there's a lot of people just loving it.
The people were people are quite mad about it. But I also like that it's fun. But you could also tell that Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon wrote it when they just had a lot of hate towards the horror world in general, with people watching screens and cheering when people die. They had something to say about it. And that, not only is it fun, but I think it has a neat little critique on the horror genre, too. And it's just fun. But it never weighs heavily on you. But it's in there.
Yeah, and not only the genre. I think it was a lot because I read a lot about what they said. And they were it was in a way a love letter as well for them. Because they love horror movies. And they just hated seeing what also the audiences were doing about it. So, or with it, you know. And, so, yeah, I was just like, I don't know. I think Cabin in the Woods was another lesson where we really need to be careful to, do the whole gatekeeping thing. We really need to be careful to get all precious about, something that doesn't really belong to you. Does it? Does a story belong to you? I mean, yeah, I think that movie really, reignited that whole debate of, and a bit of introspection, you guys. you know. If we can't laugh at ourselves, come on. Come on.
That
makes sense.
No, absolutely. Oh, no, I get it.
Gibberish.
No. I think that's what makes the best horror films, right? When people have something to say. And just talking about the gate. Because the gate, there's so many people that just want 80s horror movies. They just want that.
Yeah.
They just want, and so I don't know.
And I'm why do you just want everything to be the same? But then they complain that Underwater is derivative or whatever. But I'm like, what do you want?
That makes me so mad with the Underwater. And listen, there's so many, Alien locked people in a spaceship with an alien, right? The Thing locked people in an Antarctic station with, the book probably. And then before that was the other movie, but I'm just talking about the 82 film that locked people into a Antarctic station. And then you just have You lock people in. A cabin in the woods lock people into this area they couldn't leave. Underwater locks people into this. Descent locks people into a cave. It's just tough when it's Alien does it. And then, yeah, we have people in a cave. Oh, it's like Alien. No, like, so no one can ever lock people in a single location ever again without it being, right? It's annoying.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, people are just like, yeah, it's fine if they're fine with it. But it, yeah, contradictory. Anyway, we're going to discuss Underwater soon, so we'll, like, really go off about this then.
That's right. I ordered the Blu-ray, and it came, and then it didn't have a digital code with it, so then they're going to send me the copy again, and I got to resend the copy they sent me. But okay. There's a commentary on it. But we're doing Freaky before that, okay. So I got plenty of time. So
awesome.
All right, so hey, okay. Where can people find you?
On Twitter, at Sanandi, and you guys can see what I am up to. I do some online work. I do some offline work. I post cat pictures and yeah, I share a lot of movie stuff.
Awesome. And then, yeah, you know where to find me because you're listening to the movies from Simplex.
Well, I hope they do.
Hey, well, thank you for Dark Month. This is the end of it. It's crazy that we recorded all of these this month, three of them this month, I think. Right?
Yeah. I love it. This has been cool. Like, it's been a nice, like, theme that so randomly happened, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It very naturally just happened.
And this is the last one of them. And, you know, I told you that. I was like, hey, I got three movies here that have dark. I'll just do a month. So.
Yeah.
But this was great. Well, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Zanani Boetis, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.